All right, we'll go ahead and convene our meeting. We have Quam, Marshall, Terry today, otherwise everyone is here. Would you like to do the invocation?
Sure, be happy to.
Thank you, ma'am.
Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this day, for your blessings and for your mercies, and just for all that you do for us and with us, and that you allow us to partner with you in service, and we're just so grateful for all that you do. Lord, we pray that you'll be with us today as we work through the various agenda items. I pray for wisdom and direction and guidance and knowledge and discernment in everything that we work with today. And we just thank you so much for the ability to serve and to be able to work with these wonderful, our wonderful colleagues, and definitely our public servants. And we thank you for all these things. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Under the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Item four is opportunity for public to address the board. Do we have any, don't have any public comment cards. Do we have anyone who wishes to address the board? Item five is CAD updates. Mr. Spencer.
All right. Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here. First item that I'd like to talk to you about real quick is the property value study results. Those the preliminary findings came back from the comptroller's office. It was about 2 o'clock, I think, on January 31st when those were released. And I looked through those and happy to report that all of the school districts, all 17 ISDs in Denton County, were found to be local and valid. And so that's a good thing. If you recall back last fall, I had to come to you with a report that, you know, we had 3 school districts that were actually invalid on their findings, and they were out and in their second year of grace, which meant that they were in jeopardy of, you know, possibly losing school or state funding, state aid. And so through the 2023 property value study, we're able to get those the values where within the confidence interval and back up into valid findings from the state. Just a really quick snapshot, I just pulled down the numbers from 2021's property value study and then the 2023 that just wrapped up. And when you just look at the countywide average overall, the median level of appraised value for Denton County in 2021 was a 0.97. And that number is a percentage of, you know, what they determined to be the median level of appraised value over or under. And that confidence interval for us is 5%. So it's either 5% higher or 5% lower. We have to fall. You know, so even in 2021, when we had 3 school districts out, we were really, overall, we were only 3% low, but we were still in those 3 school districts. We were out. We were actually, I think, at about a 93% or so on those. And in 2023, is at 100, so right in the middle. It was about a 9 on the coefficient of dispersion, which is kind of the measure of central tendency on how those fall. And the lower that number is, the better you're doing on your appraisals. So just for conversation's sake, you know, a really good COD for a residential property is somewhere in the ballpark of anywhere between 5 to, you know, 10-12%, and commercial properties typically are up between 12-18%, but our overall average on the COD was a 9. So again, it was just a it was a really good result to the property value study, and I was extremely proud of the staff and the hard work that they did to get those values back in line for that value study.
What was the issue in the three school districts? Was it one issue? Was it a combination of things?
It really is, you know, depending on the overall population of the and the makeup of the school district, it determines what categories are actually studied. They have to have a certain percentage of value of a category to actually be studied. And those three school districts, Sanger, Pilot Point, and Aubrey, are more rural districts. They don't have a whole lot of commercial and personal property. So there's a lot more weight on residential values to be able to, you know, come in within that confidence interval. And so vacant land and non-qualifying vacant land and residential properties were really the two main categories that were of issue in those three school districts, and we were just low, which is not uncommon, you know. I mean, typically on our appraisals, I mean, we're looking at a trailing set of data to be able to, you know, value something on January the 1st, the effective date as of January 1st. We're typically looking at the previous 12 months worth of sales data, and everybody around here in Denton County has got to have seen over the last 3 years the astronomical increase in the market. You know, I mean, it was trending up, you know, at a clip of 20-25% a year there over, you know, 2 or 3 years' time. And so when it's increasing that quickly and you're looking at trailing data, it's really hard, you know, to develop good time adjustments, to bring those sales adjustments up to match what you feel like a January 1 number would be. And so that just creates a challenge. And so, I mean, honestly, I think statewide, CADs struggle with, trying to be at market value, at 100% of market value as of January 1, because they just don't have enough data that's concentrated around that January 1 number to really give them a good picture of it. But thankfully in this study, our residential properties were back up, you know, anywhere between 98 and 103, and our vacant land was right at 100% as well in this study. So they did a great job, you know.
Congratulations.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Thank you.
Did the three districts, have you really communicated with them and they realize this and they're really pleased, or is this just another happening?
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's our job,
yeah.
You know, and it's an expectation for us to hit that mark.
But we weren't.
But as soon as I found out, I mean, you know, I let all the school districts know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a great thing to be able to communicate that to your ISDs, your superintendents.
With all the other things they're worrying about.
This is a compliment to the staff that they got that out.
Real compliment to the staff, too, is this is not a full disclosure state.
Right.
And a lot of these sales on a lot of these big tracks aren't disclosed.
Right.
So they are truly masters at guessing.
Good, thank you.
But yes, to answer your question, that was the first email that I sent was out to the ISDs, and it was a good feeling to be able to send that out, and then to be able to send it out and let the staff know, you know, how well of a job they had done. They conquered two really huge tasks last year. They certified their appraisal roll on time, and then we passed the property value study going through that. So, you know, hats off to the staff here. They did a tremendous job. Couldn't be more proud of them. The map review, talked a little bit about that over the last couple of months, and we were getting ready to go through that. The map reviewer was here that first full week of February, and on site going through all of the documents that we had gathered for them to review on, you know, governance and procedures and you name it. I mean, they go through everything. They look to make sure that we are, you know, meeting all of our statutory requirements on required postings, and you know, notices to be sent and, you know, processing applications all the way out to, I mean, they also take a look at our appraisal methodologies and how we're applying our procedures and make sure that we're following our written procedures. So the reviewer was here for, I think she showed up on Monday, and by Wednesday evening she was packing up and she was leaving, and the next morning she sent an exit form, which reflected in her preliminary findings. Of course, she's got to present that to her management, but her preliminary findings was that all mandatory requirements were passed. And out of 88 procedures and governance questions that she has to go through, there was only one no out of all of the 88. And that one no, I will have the opportunity to turn into a yes in about a month with an email and a notice that I'm going to be sending out to the entities anyway. So again, that's just, I mean, it's a testament to what everybody has done here as a team to, you know, make sure that we're operating, you know, within the confines of the tax code and doing everything appropriately and the way we're supposed to, following procedures. Visited with you a few times about our CAMA, our computer-assisted mass appraisal software system. And I had mentioned that we were going to be going out for RFP, for request for proposals, just to look and see, you know, if there was something else out there for us that might offer solutions to, you know, some things that we're needing. You know, we lean a lot on technology, obviously, especially being, you know, still understaffed for our size, for our county and CAD size. We're still tremendously understaffed, and so we really have to leverage technology in every way we can to try to make sure that, you know, we can create efficiencies in areas where we're able and still be able to process through all this stuff. And so, you know, going through that RFP process, we posted it and we ran it in the paper for 3 weeks straight. We received two bids, two requests for the packet, and those two companies submitted bids, and this past week we have started the review process on those bids. Yesterday, the entire leadership team, several more of the IT, and then even some, you know, other staff members jumped on web demos, and we were on demos all day long yesterday for these two products, seeing what they have to offer. I know that myself, and I'm sure everybody else that were sitting on those demos, we haven't really had a time to circle back and sit and talk about everything that we saw on the demos, but we're planning to do that. Actually, we're going to find some time this next week at conference to sit and talk about that. It'll be a good opportunity, too, because those vendors are going to be at the conference. Yeah. And they'll have demo rooms set up so we could go in and you know, dive a little bit deeper into their products and get some more questions answered on that as we continue to, you know, review those bids and even start some negotiation possibly on pricing before I come back to the board next month with what we have found through the bids. And
so the various vendors will be there next week with demo rooms, so we could go in and
take
a look at those demos too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would encourage that. You know, if you get an opportunity, you know, both of those vendors will have booths set up and they'll have representatives there at the trade show, and you'll be able to go and visit with them there. You'll be able to find out when their demo rooms are available, and you know, see their products and ask them questions from a board's perspective, and I would highly encourage that.
Okay, good.
That would be good.
That would be good. Yeah.
So are you going to tell them who the two?
Not yet.
Okay.
We're still, like I said, we're in the very, what I would consider to be the very preliminary phase of this. You know, we haven't really even got to fully unpack the entire bid packets. I mean, they're big binders full of information, and like I said, yesterday was our first opportunity to really get a look at both of these products side by side and see what they have to offer. So I've got a couple of pages of notes and questions that I want to follow up with these folks on.
Did you find significant differences in the products?
I did, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Were there any offers to beta test?
No.
Good answer.
All right, next.
So this Tuesday, we met here with the Ag Advisory Board. In this room, as a matter of fact, and Gary Zeitler, a gentleman that owns Eagle Appraisal, we contract with him to do our ag productivity value calculations. He works closely with the Ag Advisory Board and with staff here through ag surveys and gathering information to be able to develop those ag productivity schedules for the land values for that productivity value, right? Because on ag land, there's a market value, we say what it's worth on the open market, but then that special appraisal allows for a reduction in the actual taxable value on that special value. And those are the values that he calculates. He gathers all of the income and expense data, you know, for ag lease land and what's typical in Benton County. And it's basically worked up as an income approach, what that land is valued at on an ag productivity income. And so we met, and he presented those 2024 values to us to be able to be input into our system and used for this year. And I'll say that the ag values themselves were generally flat. There were actually a few of the categories, maybe it was native pasture, I can't remember, I think it was native pasture that actually went down a little bit, but generally flat, so on a tax liability, you know, we're not going to see any increases on the ag values. Tomorrow, the 16th, is the deadline to file an application to be on the ballot for the Place one, at-large place one, place two, and place three for the board of directors, those new positions for the May 4th election. We will have to have another meeting here, probably, I'm looking at February 26th. It'll be a quick meeting. We're not really going to have a whole lot of business on it, but there will be the need for the drawing of the ballot. It's just a process that the board's going to have to do once all the candidates have been named. We have to draw the ballot and then get the ballot language together and get that over.
Do we have to be artistic to do that?
Yeah, we might have to. No, I believe there's some code requirements for how we can do that, and you know, we'll step through that process. But anyways, we wanted to bring that to your attention because that wasn't a calendared meeting, but this election process is really new still, and had I known, I didn't recognize that we were going to have that, you know, that meeting to do that. But
when is that?
February 26th.
Should we set that now?
Well, we can talk about it at the end of the meeting. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to go ahead and bring that to your attention. We've gone ahead and coordinated with our print vendor for the vendor that we use for appraisal notices and set our date for real property notices to go out this year for April 1st. We're going to mail our notices out on April 1st this year. We still have quite a bit of planning to do internally as far as just, you know, we want to make sure that our communication is good to the property owners, you know, that we have good, clear, concise direction for them once they get that appraisal notice on what the process is going to look like for them. We also want to make sure that we, you know, have refined our processes internally on how we're going to handle, you know, the incoming protests and how we're going to handle informal reviews with the appraisers and how the protest hearings are actually going to be set up and scheduled as well. And then the last thing I was going to talk about was one other thing that I'm pretty excited about is we had electricians were in here yesterday and we're getting an area set up up front in the lobby to be able to set up kiosks for the customer service area up there to kind of help with the flow of traffic as people come in to get them checked in. They'll be able to check in on those touch screens to be able to indicate what they're here for, you know, and it will just kind of help with the flow of traffic in that front door and get people where they need to go a little bit faster. So it'll cut down on some of the wait times for folks and streamline a little bit of that. So.
Is that associated with the queuing vendor, or is
it
that?
It is. Okay. Yeah, with Queueless. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I think, you know, last meeting, Chris and them talked about how they had an opportunity to go down to TravisCAD, and that's one of the things that TravisCAD in place down there. Actually, the same vendor, Queueless, and so they got to see that in operation, and so we're excited to be able to work on implementing that. I think it'll be, you know.
So for the customer, the process will be shortened.
Yes, because currently, you know, they come in the front door and there's some stanchions up there. If there's a line, they just have to sit there and wait until they can get to the window to tell somebody what they're here for.
Sure.
Right? And so that's going to eliminate that automatically. And so when they come in and they can walk up to one of those kiosks, they can go ahead and punch their information in and what they're here for, and it's going to push them into the queue. And so if they're here to see an appraiser, you know, they can kind of bypass that having to go to a window, and having to page an appraiser and get an appraiser. It'll bypass a lot of that.
You will find that it really makes a difference to be able to categorize the reasons for the visit and being able to streamline that. Yeah. I know with our queuing system, oh my goodness, it makes a difference.
It
makes
a huge difference.
It makes such a difference.
Michelle, is that the same system y'all use?
It is not. No, we're on a different system, but the concept is the same. I think the kiosks are just, they're so necessary to be able to truly implement the entire queuing customer software management tool.
Yeah. And they have very friendly cops up there at the front to help them find their way to the kiosk.
Yes, we sure do.
Because typically people, when they come into either place, theirs or here, they're kind of grumpy, they part with money, and having a uniformed person who is cheerfully helping.
It makes a difference.
It lowers the temperature in the room.
Yes, it does. Right.
How many are we going to have?
I think we're looking at five.
I think so.
Like
three here and
two
towards the
back. Yeah, I believe five total.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where will customers wait at once they check in? Is there going to be a seating area or?
Well, what we have available, right? We've got like three different little seating areas up there. I mean, we're pretty limited on space. I will say the one good thing with Queueless is there is the option and availability for the text paging, of a patron that has entered into that system, and so that'll be something that we can explore as well, especially during, you know, heavier seasons when we've got a lot of traffic.
Sure.
You know, I'm sure we can, because we do utilize that during protests. You know, so that's all I have. Pass it over.
That was a lot.
It was a lot.
So just pass out some appraisal department stats and updates.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
It's a similar format to what we looked at last time, so it'll be familiar to you. But in terms of residential, all of the sales that we had to work through, a total of 16,515. We've completed 13,668. And I am told by our director of residential that we have 2,847 remaining. And that can be a real tedious process of going through each sale. The goal behind it is to make sure that we've validated the data and that we're putting good data in so that we get good data out, so that we're accurate. Permits, rechecks, and new construction, we reviewed, inspected, roughly 63,000, just over that, almost 64. There's right at about 1,000 remaining. And then new construction, there's roughly 474 properties still remaining to complete. And they are winding things down in terms of the, you know, the field work and field inspection and review. And then we'll be transitioning into more of the analysis phase coming up here very quickly. In terms of agricultural, we have received so far 602 applications, and we have 57 processed. Don't let that number deceive you. There's a lot of phone calls that are taking place, a lot of emails, a lot of follow-up visits. And so as we get closer to the deadline, which is April 30th, for applications to be filed, and those who request an extension, they can do so as well. That number of process will, you know, quickly change and as they go through that. In the commercial department, we've completed almost every one of our field inspections that we wanted to look at. 3301, about 20 miscellaneous type things are remaining, and they're verifying roughly 439 commercial type sales, and they will be transitioning shortly to the analysis phase as well. Business personal property, we've completed 100%. In fact, those first three bullets there, those are not changed from the last time, but I left them on there just so you could see in terms of the renditions. We mailed out roughly 20,000 renditions. The deadline for a business owner to file their rendition is April 15th. Unless they request an extension, which they can do, and many will, and sometimes those come there at the last minute. But we've only received so far just over 1,100, and so that's about 325 more than what we had received this time last year. And they are finishing up some preparation work for processing them. The scanning process takes place. But right around March 1st is when that process will begin of working those on a steady basis, and then we'll have numbers to report to you from that standpoint. Deeds and mapping, our deeds recorded through January 29th have been processed, so that's excellent. It tells us that we're really tight on the window. Permits, we've completed roughly 99%. We're still waiting on some permits and some blueprints from a few of our entities to close out 2023, but we're working with them and getting those completed. Sales data entry, our deeds mapping department, John, who's our director of deeds and mapping, GIS, they take and they input the sales for us, and then the appraisal departments go and review that. That's all been completed through December 2023. So we have everything that we're aware of from this past year inputted, which is what the staff has been working on. In terms of sketching, 271 homes to sketch for new buildings discovered, and that is up through February 13th, 2024. And there's 155 that we're waiting to sketch, but we're waiting on blueprints and permitting from the taxing entities. GIS, we have added all the subdivisions for the plats that have been filed since February 1st. So that's a very tight window. That means we're almost neck and neck with what's being filed and us getting that into the system. All of that helps speed up the process. So it pays dividends down the road. Moving forward, now these are often target dates. Donna's already mentioned our date for notices to go out, but these are often target dates. Real property analysis should be completed on March the 15th. On the 16th and the following week, we will begin the process of going through clerical errors, any type of reporting that we need to look at, so that we can get those values to the print vendor, and then they can be there in order to go out on time April 1st, which I don't know if you recall, but last year, I think notices went out roughly around April 15th to April 17th. Mm-hmm. And so to get those out earlier by 2 weeks is going to provide more time for property owners to protest. It doesn't change the protest deadline. It actually somewhat lengthens that time frame that they have to protest, which is good for the property owner. And it's also beneficial for the appraiser to have more time to work those. So that will be taking place March 16th. In April, that's our April 1st notices to be mailed. April 15th, BPP rendition deadline. April 30th, agricultural application deadline. And then in May, on the 3rd, that's our target date to send our first business personal property run of notices out. Since they have until the 15th to submit their rendition, most renditions come in right around the last of the season, so right there around the 15th. So then they process all those as quickly as possible. So that first run goes out the 3rd. Real property protest deadline, May 15th. And then our second target run for BPP notices will go out the 23rd of May. So that just gives you an idea in terms of timeline, what's coming and what we're looking at taking place coming forward.
I know every year we tend to have more protests, more people coming. Do y'all track the percentage of growth in that number? Like it's 10% more people protested their values than last year, or whatever the percentage is?
So, you know, with just having had my 1 year anniversary, February 1st, historically, I know we have that data because it's put into our GAMA system. We should be able to pull that and retrieve it. But yes, that is something that we're looking at and tracking right now. And that I would say that growth line has been trending up.
Sure. I've tried to correlate it with anything, and I can't really correlate it with, you know, market value increases or population growth or you name it. I mean, I think my first year here, 2020, we had, and this is going to be a really rough ballpark guess because I don't have it in front of me, it was close to 100,000, right? And then this past year, just right almost 140,000. Mm-hmm. So
I was thinking this in terms of if you could sort of know what's happened in the past, you could see what's coming and make sure you're staffed.
I mean, we're always going to anticipate a growth in, you know, that number of protests, but knowing, you know, what to correlate that with and to really have a good guess on the number, you know, it's really hard.
If you had enough data, you could probably do a prediction based upon the increased number of parcels.
We don't have enough historical data to really do a really good trend and try to figure that out because it wasn't the way that data was captured prior, at least prior to me getting here. It was captured a little bit differently because they looked at everything, you know, the informal reviews right alongside the protest, so there was it kind of skews the numbers, right? It does. It's not a good representative picture, and so I don't have a lot of good historical data to really.
Well, you could spend a lot of time analyzing that, but the fact of the matter is, however many protests show up,
that's
you
got
to do with all of them.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Being staffed for it would be nice, but we can't staff for it to begin with.
Well, it's. I see reports from demographers that come to the schools, and there's a concrete relationship between starts and closings. Mm-hmm. There's some data there that, I think y'all could make some use of, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's complete enough to drive your staffing.
Yeah.
But it's just a thought.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of protest and inquiries, because many times people will come in and they'll do an informal. And if we can resolve something informally, that's the way to do it. It's a win for the property owner, and they walk away and they presented their evidence. It's helped in making an accurate determination of where that value really should be, and they don't have to file a protest. So I think historically, yes, those protests, as Don said, have gone up. That also depends on market trends. If you look at the real estate market, there could be a flattening there, potentially what we're seeing. That could affect, you know, what values do and whether or not people decide to protest. If things are relatively mild, they may not. Agents, they may anyways, you know, but, you know, and the bulk of our protest, roughly 60%+, tend to come from property tax agents, you know, that have been employed. Their services are being, you know, utilized in order to protest the value. So, but we just want to make sure that we're getting the values accurate, and then when evidence is presented that's good and solid, that we're doing the right thing and making adjustments and move on to the next value.
I think just looking at the data overall of what you're accomplishing this year tells me that we have a better customer understanding of how they have to go through a process. Mm-hmm. They're frustrated enough when they get here. And so every change that I hear about makes me realize that hopefully the data is going to tell us one thing and the economy is going to either be up or down. I'm very concerned there.
Yeah.
But I think we need to keep trending with what we're doing with that customer.
Yeah. And it's important to us as well to make sure that we preserve the property owner rights. They have rights, administrative rights that are given to them by law. We want to make sure that we preserve those rights. So it's very important.
Good information, by the way. Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Where are we in the gap analysis process?
The last time I spoke to this gentleman was about a week ago. I'd sent him some pictures that he had requested. He just wanted some pictures of the insides of the buildings and kind of the layout and stuff like that, because he's assessing, you know, the building and space needs and within his review. And he still spoke to the fact that he feels like he feels confident that he'll be able to release, you know, the report, preliminary report, by the last, you know, the last week of February, excuse me, and he's going to be here for the March meeting. He's already booked everything for his travel to come in and make his report and presentation to the board in March.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Good afternoon. I have a few updates for you today. You know, I've been mentioning that the appeals department has been working towards a better and more efficient protest season. Some of the items we're looking to do is, first we're looking at what information is on our website and how that's laid out. We'd like to make it a little easier for property owners to find what they need, including forms. So we're taking a look at that. And then, as Don mentioned, we're working with IT to have some kiosks set up for self-check-in. That also allows the appeal support person that we have that works at the counter here to scan in evidence into the system for the property owner to reduce the paper that's being passed around at hearings. It's just quicker and more efficient if you can just pull it up for them. It's on the screen for everybody to see. We're also looking at putting mentioning the queueless system when they check into the kiosk. And a lot of times, if they're here for a protest, they're sitting in this room, and we're looking at putting a list on the TV to show them where they're at in line, because they come to the counter a lot and say, where am I at, how long am I looking at? So we're hoping to help with that. And then we will get the ARB set up for their state training soon. Those dates haven't been released yet, but it should be any day now. We are up to 41 total ARB members. So, that's fantastic.
We ended at 28 last year?
Yes, I believe it was 28 or 29. Yes, sir. And we're budgeted for 42. By the way, I've been saying 44, but our TLO today let me know that we're actually budgeted for 42. So we only lack one more, and we'll be cool. Hopefully we can hold on to that. Yes, because that will help us to have more panels. We plan plan on having 7 in this building that will be strictly for walk-in property owners. And this year, it's Don's vision, actually, to have some panels over in the other building to host agents that sometimes, maybe they just have a few, but sometimes they're here for weeks on end trying to work through all their accounts. And then also the telephone and video conference hearings. That can be done without any property owner having to walk over to the other building or anything, but we can have more panels going. So we're really looking forward to that to help us clear out the protest quicker to be able to certify on time. Our IT department has resolved the issue we were having with the new MacBooks, and they've resumed upgrading all the team's machines. So we're working on that, and they've made some steady process with the server migration. They're about halfway done getting the servers migrated over to that new platform. The Exemption and Assistance Department has completed a couple of the mass mailings. We sent out 5,445 exemption verification letters. So those go to the new owners, address, people with address changes, anything we need to verify or that they need to reapply. And then 3,094 homestead mass mailing, that's where they have the same situs and mailing address, but they don't have a homestead exemption. It's just to notify them that they could qualify for that if that's their primary residence. Business operations. We've had a lot of personnel title changes and such like that for 24, and they've been getting everything updated that's related to that. The move between buildings is pretty much complete. We're going to begin to work on a little bit of a shift here in this building as well, just to make room for some new hires to come in. And they also sent out all the 1099s and W-2s, got all that done, and they're currently setting up direct deposit for our ARB members. We've been paying them by paper check, and the ones I've talked to are very excited to go to direct deposit. And they're preparing now for the annual audit that will be coming soon. Training and development. Mike's been teaching, but he's also been working on some core documents for us that are going to be the foundation of kind of the direction the CAD goes. Core concepts, standard operating procedures, and he's been working to get us to be a core course provider so that we can conduct our own trainings. And up next, he'll be working on a master task list so that we can look at alignment and just make sure each department, you know, their tasks are aligned for really what they should be doing. And that's all I've got for today. Any questions?
How would you went on the exemption automation thing? You were going to talk about that.
We've actually been talking with a company that may help us with that. We've looked at some different options. There are several products out there that have an online form fillable, and that it sends, you know, either a list or an actual PDF or whatever to us. But we're looking at a company too that can help us with this backlog. We just can't seem to get caught up, so we're looking at, you know, some different things, not just a company to help us get it done.
What is our backlog right now, roughly?
I haven't asked in the last couple of weeks, but I know it was like 6,000 a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
Which, that tends to get worse this time of year.
Understandable.
It's the deadline to file, but then with protest season, they're helping so much with protests and informals that
it gets backed up. What I recall, that's down from what we had before.
Yes,
time,
so. It is, yes.
Good.
Yep. And we have 7 openings up there, so once we have 2 more people starting in a couple weeks. But, you know, it takes time to train those people to be able to process exemption forms. But I expect that we'll be there soon.
Very good. Any more questions?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Consent agenda? Anybody want anything removed from the consent agenda? If not, can we get a motion?
No approval.
I second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Passes unanimously. Item 7.
Yeah, so one of the new tasks that we have to, that the board has to take care of for this election is ordering the election. So I've laid a form in front of all of you. It basically just lines out the election date, you know, where it's to be held, the early voting location, the times and dates. It defines the places right up front, up top there for at-large place one, at-large place two, and at-large place three. And basically just need the board to execute this, and this will be posted to kick off the May 2024 election for the board of directors.
Do we know how many polling sites are planned?
I don't yet. I've been in communication with the Elections Administration Office, which we intend to contract with for this election, and they have not released all of those yet. And so currently, you know, we just have the main elections site here listed for the county.
There's nothing else on the ballot?
I'm sorry?
Is there anything else on the ballot election day?
Not
on our ballot.
Not on ours.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Yep. This is it. So this will be a joint election countywide.
Yeah, I would think that there'd be just the regular municipal schools, all of that.
Yes.
Plus this. Okay.
It'll be interesting to see what the cost per ballot winds up being.
So, just need the board to adopt this document as our order for election for the 2024 Board of Directors election.
So moved.
I second.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Item 8, appoint Agriculture Advisory Board members.
So, as I stated earlier, we had an Ag Advisory Board meeting earlier this week. We actually had a new gentleman show up that was wanting to serve on that board as well, which is good. We had, I don't know if you recall or not, last year one of the Ag Advisory Board members passed away, and another Ag Advisory Board member decided that she was done. She had served for years. I honestly don't know how many years she had served on the Ag Board, but for years. And she decided that she was going to, focus on family. I think she's even passing on the family farm. So, I've got two members that I was going to ask you for appointment for a 2-year term. We have to stagger the Ag Advisory Board, and then two members as to appoint as a 1-year term. I'm just asking for your authorization to appoint Eddie Baggs and Daphne Zollinger for a 2-year term, and then Tom Rainey, which is the new gentleman that came in, and then David Fuller for a 1-year term on the Ag Advisory Board. Aside from Tom Rainey, I met him, spoke with him. He's a very kind gentleman, and his family's been farming here in Denton, not too far from here, for decades, from what I understand. But the other three, Eddie, Daphne, and David, would all be returning members that have already been serving, and they've been great. And so I would ask that you allow me to reappoint them to the Ag Advisory Board.
Motion.
I'll second that motion.
Moved, seconded.
I'm a seconder today.
Any further discussion on this? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No, that passes.
Do we have advocates for bees?
Mm-hmm. He's not on the Ag Advisory Board because he doesn't meet the resident requirement, but he is. I mean, this region's kind of bee person. He's very passionate about it.
Good.
He's engaged across the state in beekeeping, and does a lot of e-leases, and but yeah, super great guy, Gary Barber. He comes to every meeting and, you know, offers his input, and and he assists a lot of property owners in Denton County with beekeeping.
Good.
Item 9, personnel policy change.
So, on this policy that I'm asking for your authorization to change, our current personnel policy has a nepotism policy clause in it. And I feel that the current policy has got some limitations in it that restrict me and my ability to actually employ some folks that might be really talented individuals. But unfortunately, I wouldn't be able to under the current nepotism policy. You know, we've got, currently we've got 9 departments in the organization, spanning across, you know, over 100 people now. And I feel like, you know, under prudent management and just, you know, wise business choices, I feel like there could be a possibility to employ, you know, someone that is a relative of another in a different department, and there not being any kind of conflict. You know, the state tax code has got statutory requirements for, you know, no nepotism in regard to the chief appraiser. And so essentially what I'm asking is for you to allow me to strike 2 paragraphs from the nepotism policy, which leaves a policy in place that echoes what the tax code says. And it's basically just in regard to any nepotism, you know, in relation to the chief appraiser, to me. And allow me the discretion on the hiring practices here.
Question there. Like Chris, though, there is also a guideline that Chris can't hire his son, for instance, working directly for him. Is that not correct? That type of thing is covered. And I'm going to add to that, everyone has their own history. I worked for TI for 27 years, and they believed 100% in having family members, and they still do. I call them to make sure.
Yeah.
And it's very workable. But there are a few safety factors in there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked at those?
No, I don't guess I have.
Per department.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically the way the policy is presented, and as far as what I'm asking to change, would it really just puts the discretion in my hands.
I'm 100% for the idea. I just want to make sure that we're not setting you up in any way for a problem by having one of your department heads bring in.
Right. And I considered that as I was trying to change the policy, but it's once you start trying to structure a policy and you put different caveats in, it's like, where do you stop? And, you know, so essentially, again, this to me was the cleanest presentation, and it puts sole responsibility in my lap, right, for the hiring practices, to make sure that we are not doing anything that's going to disrupt work by, you know, putting relatives side by side, and you know, it turned into a bad situation. It just puts the responsibility solely on my shoulders for that. Like I said, I did consider, you know, how do you structure a policy to put those safety, you know, those safeties in place, but then where do I stop? And it starts to become a really...
Well, what I saw was very limited policies. Yeah. This is not a book about how do you hire someone at all. It was more of, and I support the concept. I want to make sure everyone understands that.
Sure.
I just wanted to know, when anyone says to me, I have the 100% responsibility without having some guideline, that can bite you sometimes.
Yeah. Yes.
So that was my only thought.
Open to recommendations. Again, this was what I wanted to bring to you, and open it up for discussion and consideration. So
So probably you need the flexibility because, you know, you have an org chart now, but that org chart could change.
Yeah.
And if you shifted that, then it could put you in violation of
sure.
one of those. Is that the real reason for needing the flexibility?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's part of it,
sure.
right? But, and again, you know, any of that could possibly require, the more that I put into this policy could require me to have to come back if in fact, because we are going to continue to possibly restructure as we grow.
Right.
You know, and the way it reads right now, we wouldn't have that problem because the only issue would be is if I'm hiring somebody that's related to me.
Sure.
Right. And then the rest of it is I'm going to make sure that, you know, that Chris wouldn't hire a relative and Jeannie wouldn't hire a relative or one of my directors doesn't hire a relative or have a relative working directly under them, I'm going to be the one that's going to ensure that that doesn't happen.
Right. That's the only concern that I have.
Yeah.
Is having a person in a managerial position that then one of their family members is in their direct line.
I just wouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
I do have a little bit of concern about it not being actually stipulated, though.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a problem with hiring of other family members,
yeah.
but I am concerned about that being that direct management line in writing.
Well, then let me just do this. Let me go back and work on this some more, and then I'll bring it back to you
okay.
next month. How about that?
That would be great. And
okay.
I think there's a couple of people that could send you
easily
their very line.
Yeah.
Policy. This
yeah.
is not a book.
20 years ago, the school district had a policy that you could not hire family members, pretty much, period. We lost a lot of good people that we could because we could not hire them.
Yeah.
And what happened was we got big enough that we could hire people and put them in places where
right.
so chance that their direct report is their
right.
is their family
right.
member.
Yeah.
And that's what you're trying to avoid.
Right.
The school district's achieved it 20 years ago. It's worked flawlessly.
Yeah.
Pick up the phone and call if you want. I'll have them call you
yeah.
and say, this is how we did it. And it's
I think what I'm hearing is direct reports to your direct reports. So, or within the reporting up to your direct reports. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, by law, you can't hire a relative. And I think what I'm hearing is one level below that.
Mm-hmm.
So your direct reports, you would not have a relative working for one of your, relative of the direct report working for that direct report. That was saying direct and report a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So in other words, if I work for the CAD and one of my kids comes in to work for the CAD and I'm director over BPP, my children could not come in and also work under BPP. They could go to, you know, another
that's
department
what,
within the organization.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. Another department within the organization,
yeah.
I wouldn't have a problem with. I just think you get into some real dicey areas if a person who is the manager also has a relative, and if there is a situation where there is a disciplinary issue, or on the converse side, where the perception of other staff members are, well, this person is doing this, but they're not getting in trouble like I would, you know, for the protection of the district and for the protection of the managers is all I'm thinking about.
Sure.
Protecting the manager is real important because if you... Say you have the child of an employee and the child of a John Q. public applying for the same job, and the kid, the relative of the employee, gets it, you know, you could just see how that could spin out of control. And just want to be sure you're covered there.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I also think we all want the best employees you can get.
Sure.
So let's not create something for you that could give you friction down the line.
Mm-hmm.
Let's open it, but let's open it with just a few guidelines.
Yeah.
At least that's
yeah.
that's my vision.
Yeah.
Very good. I appreciate that.
All right. I'm sorry, I have a 4 o'clock filing deadline in the case. I'm just making sure what got supposed to get done got done. Executive session? Do we have anything for executive session?
I don't have anything.
Counsel, do we have anything for that you'd like to pontificate about?
I have nothing specific today.
I feel like Big Brother is watching us today. This is so funny with all these microphones.
Okay, well, if we have no need for executive session, we don't have any personnel matters to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay.
Then future agenda items.
Yeah, so like I said in my Chief Appraiser report, we will have to meet. And as far as the time for that meeting, I mean, it can even be a little bit later in the evening on the 26th. It'll be a 4:30 or 5 o'clock meeting. It's gonna be a relatively short meeting. I'm not gonna have any other business necessarily to bring to you on that agenda. Other than, I mean, there's two possible scenarios. We're either drawing a ballot or we're canceling an election. That's the two. But one of those two we're going to have to take action on, and I'm going to need to do it by the 26th. So I think everybody will be able to make it.
I can. I'm good.
26th?
Yes. Yeah, it'll be the Monday after.
They haven't set a time yet. 26th.
Yeah, I can do it.
Okay. Is there a better time for you all for that meeting, considering that it's
3:30 or after? 3:30 or after.
I can do that.
So I can do that.
3:30.
Okay. So we'll convene at 3:30 on the 26th.
Trial ends on Friday, that the judge says will end on Friday, then I'm pretty confident it will.
All right.
She said it well.
Judges talk loud.
Anything further? Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Any opposed? All right, we'll adjourn. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Did everyone sign the copy?